Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Blank Canvas. I'm very happy to be sitting in for my good friend and colleague, Amanda Colson, who is the normal host of this show. My name is John Cox, formerly affiliated with the NAGB, and happy to jump in and help Amanda this evening. Tonight, we are, and I should also say that we're listening to Guardian Radio 96.9, and I have in studio with me Alistair Stevenson, who is, welcome Alistair.
Thank you.
Who is a longtime creative, part of the creative community here, somebody who has worked in ceramics and has got a really, really interesting story over the last couple of years. So we're going to be hanging out with Alistair for the next hour and learning about his past and what he's doing and kind of what's coming up. So I'm very happy to be here again. And remember, you can be following us on www.guardiantalkradio.com and listen to the show there and also hear past episodes there as well for those people who are interested. So what I thought we would focus on in this first segment with Alistair is just kind of giving everybody a bit of a backdrop. I know Alistair because I'm 1,000 years old and I taught at the College of the Bahamas many, many moons ago and had the privilege of teaching a lot of people who ended up being quite awesome artists, and Alistair falls into that category. But Alistair, give us a little bit of your history as a young artist back in the COB days. Talk to us about those days.
Right. First of all, good evening, everybody, and thank you, John, as well as Blank Canvas in general for having me here. I actually began at COB in 2007, and at that time I was studying art education, and after about 4 years of fighting with it, basically, I found that I just absolutely hated it. It was just too much administrative, too much administrative work for me. Mm-hmm. So what I wound up doing is, shy of 10 courses from a bachelor's degree, I just decided, well, I'll just switch to my associate's in art. And one semester later, I graduated. After that, I was working, before I graduated, I was working at the D'Aguilar Art Foundation, initially as a curatorial assistant, more or less. Mm-hmm. But upon graduating, I actually moved into being their curator.
Right.
So I had the pleasure of working, during that time, I had the pleasure of working with Holly Perotti and, of course, Saskia D'Aguilar, and working with the D'Aguilar family. And during that year of work, that must have been from 2012 to 2013, I was making plans to actually go back to China. I had been there previously in 2012 for a workshop, basically. So it was a ceramics workshop that we did, and I absolutely fell in love with the place.
Right.
And after I came back, I was like, well, I have to find ways to go back.
Right,
I wound up applying for a Chinese government scholarship, which many Bahamian students have been doing. And I got it. I was quite pleased with that. After that year of working at the D'Aguilar Art Foundation, I then moved on to China in 2013.
All right. That's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of stuff I want to get to with you, because I think that your path is a very unique one. But I'd like to kind of talk a little bit about along the road to your development to where you are now, and you're also going to be talking about a show that you have coming up and an artist talk and
right. And
you know, other things. So we'll get to that in the coming segments. But I want to talk a little bit about, because I think that this show, we are talking about creative culture and anything to do with kind of issues that relate at large to this community of growing creatives and how this industry grows and how this economy grows
right.
and how this community grows. And I want to know what type of experiences. I know that you just said you were studying art education and that was not really for you, you know, and I totally understand that. Teaching is has a particular, requires a particular type of mindset, which sometimes is not very difficult. It's not very easy to kind of do, especially if
right.
your heart's somewhere else. But you were always the ceramics guy. Like I remember that in the old days. I mean, there was like people who are, it takes a special person. Like you just don't do kind of ceramics on the side. You
right.
need to really, if you're really going to be good at that, that almost needs to be,
it has to be everything you do, basically.
The kind of starring role. So can you talk a little bit about who your early maybe influences were or instructors were that maybe made that impact with you?
I think it goes back as far as high school, really. At the time, back in Long Island, I was at NGM Major High School, and it must have, I think it was in the 11th grade, and my teacher at the time, Julie Knowles, she invited Joanne Biag to come up to do a workshop with us using clay that they had found nearby the school. And this clay was actually found from, they were digging a cesspit there, I think, and they just stumbled upon this big pit of clay. And so we worked with that. We did some pit firings, and we just had a really good time. So my earliest influence in sense of, in the sense of instructors would have been those two, Julie Knowles and Joanne Biag.
I want to stop you for a second. Clay, you found clay here. Is it common to find clay within the Bahamian landscape? I mean, I've heard of it being found in like the Abacos and, you know, do we find it on New Providence as well?
I've never found it on New Providence, but again, I've never been looking for it here.
Right.
I mean, the thing is, clay exists everywhere, right? But I think, and I'm not very good with my understanding of geology, etc. But I think maybe because we have mostly limestone here in the Bahamas, there's not a lot of soil. We get less clays here. However, they do exist. I mean, there are other places. Like I remember a gentleman finding clay on Long Island on one of this nearby key, which he actually gave me a bit of to test. And it's all like very low fire sort of clays. They aren't very, they can't be fired very high. So the quality isn't that good in terms of clay, but it does exist. And it's actually an industry, I think, if some way we can actually tap into that, especially for ceramic artists, it would be super beneficial.
Okay.
Instead of having to actually import the material, actually being able to use your locally made clays.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit more about your experiences early. So you said, did you work with Joanne Biag? She came down to Long Island and she worked with you. Was she one of the instructors at COB when you were in the program?
Yes, yes. She was there when I first started at COB. And at the time, that was in 2007, fall 2007. And I didn't start working with her, learning with her until 2008. That was would have been spring 2008. And then in fall 2009, I actually started working with her as her studio assistant.
Okay.
Yeah. So
all right.
I got a lot of my, I worked with her for several years actually, and I got quite a lot of my technical skill and technical understanding of clay from her.
So from a standpoint of being technical, I think for our listeners that may not know, I think that we in the creative community just assume that everybody kind of understands all the jargon that we're talking about.
Right.
So can you kind of in a nutshell explain to our listeners what the kind of process from a technical point of view is to take a work that is in clay from its inception to being completely resolved? Like, what does that entail? What kind of equipment do you need, et cetera?
Right, right. Generally speaking, I mean, clay, you want to fire it, or we say fire. Fire means burn, bake the actual object. And so you
what would, is what are those temperatures like?
Those are, those temperatures range, I mean, you could go from, I don't know, 900 to 1,000. This is all in centigrade. I don't know it in Fahrenheit. Sorry.
Right, right, right. That's right.
900 to 1,000 degrees centigrade to, I mean, generally speaking, ceramic artists who want to work in porcelain may go up to maybe 1,300 degrees Celsius centigrade.
Right.
But you actually have people who produce like porcelain cutlery, porcelain objects for, or like ceramic objects for electrical and engineering work, or plating sort of ceramic armor for airplanes, tanks, you know, army sort of soldier, you know, armor worn by soldiers, etc. And that stuff you can actually probably get fired up to maybe like 1700, 2200 degrees centigrade.
And so
very
these
high.
These types of degrees of, in terms of temperature, we're talking about having these things set up for how long? How long does one need to fire something that, say, you're talking about? Let's just say, let's keep it simple. Let's just say we're making a bowl.
Yeah,
we're doing like a pinch pot bowl.
Pinch pot bowl, and you have a kiln filled with that. I mean, you could fire in 8 hours sometimes, and that's even pretty quick. Mm-hmm. You can fire up to 14 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you say the kiln, what is the kiln?
The kiln itself is basically the baker, like the oven. Mm-hmm. It's like the oven for ceramics. Uh-huh. And there are many versions to it. I mean, you get wood kilns, electric kilns.
You can also put them in the ground, right? You can make a kiln that goes in the earth, right?
That is, and exactly, that is the simplest, the earliest method that our ancients would have used.
Right, Lucayans did that, right?
Lucayans did that. And they even baked it, like, just in the sand, in the heat as well. But basically what you do, you dig a hole in the ground, you put a layer of combustible object, usually, of course, like vegetation, anything dry, any sort of trees you can burn, a layer of ceramics, layer of trees, layer of ceramics, layer of trees, and you burn it from the top down. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is it smokes sort of very slowly, and you get all these sorts of flashes of dark smoke that can, you know, make very beautiful objects.
Right.
Now, these, of course, the temperature for this may go up to like 1,000 degrees centigrade, but that even isn't... It's not very strong, the material is still quite porous, and it's not extremely functional.
Right.
But, of course, that's what the Lucayans were doing here 500 years ago, and even before that.
Okay. So speaking of 500 years ago, approximately how long has this process been going on for? This is kind of like a prehistoric...
This is one of the earliest processes, actually. I mean...
BC,
definitely... 5,000 years ago, at least.
Wow.
I mean, it's a very early, very, very early form of...
I mean, it's fascinating to me when you think about clay. We don't think of what you are talking about, like the industrialized use of clay that you can actually fire things. I know that people talk about having like ceramic bearings in cars or in... different machines to think that you can have something that you know what a bearing is and how much pressure and you know what I mean, that you can actually fire something to a degree that this composition would become such that that could withstand withstand that type of pressure.
Right.
So that, I mean, that is all very, very fascinating. Do you have any particular things that you recall about COB? We're winding down this session, this first section. But what in the early days or any other your colleagues you recall at that point that are still working on it? Because when we go to the next section, I want to talk a little bit about how ceramics kind of fits into the fine art world in a bigger sense, and how and where you've kind of gone from there, you know?
Right. I mean, I think one of the earliest things that I can remember about COB that really influenced me were the old kick wheels they have there. So a wheel is, if anybody's ever watched Ghosts, you know, with Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore, you know.
I think we all have watched that.
Yeah, so the thing that spins the clay that you make pots with, basically.
Right.
But anyway, there are usually electric versions to them now. But the earlier ones would have been like kick wheels, where you have this sort of cement, a slab of cement at the bottom and connecting to an axle that connects to a wheel. A plate at the top, basically, which you spin the clay on. So you have to sit there and actually kick the cement slab in order to get it to turn and actually create what you want.
Right.
I think that was one of the biggest influences for me, because I like this sort of very early sort of primitive ways of creating ceramics. It's something that's very interesting to me. Not in my personal practice, but as an influence for creation.
As a kind of method, I remember going down to the T-block and seeing... everybody kind of working on those wheels, and you know, everybody in their coveralls, like, you know,
sweating.
Yeah, very much sweating and fully dedicated to this discipline. That's awesome. So, I wanted to ask another quick question as we segue into the next section about so what we could talk about it now and then move on. What's the main difference? What is like pottery within the ceramics world? Like, what is the difference? There's a differential. Pottery is under the umbrella of ceramics, right?
Right. Pottery would just be, I would say, mostly related to just creating pots, like vessels, objects to hold something in.
Are they more like utilitarian?
Yeah, more or less utilitarian. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that they can't be art objects as well. You know what I mean? You have potters who create work that... I don't know, for example, Grayson Perry in the UK, I mean, he makes these beautiful pots, handmade, coiled pots that recently he's been putting images of, like, how do you say, like, what's been happening with Brexit and, like, the people of the UK.
So it becomes a platform
for something bigger. A platform for something bigger.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's exactly what we are doing. And my alarm is going off, which is telling us we need to get to the next section. So we want to talk a little bit more about fine art and craft and all of that stuff. We're listening to The Blank Canvas. We're on Guardian 96.9. I'm in the studio with Alistair Stevenson. I'm your sit-in host today, John Cox. And we'll be back right after this break. Thank you.